Mr. Wood, reel one. Where were you born, Mr. Wood?
In Birkenhead.
Which year was that?
1921.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a dock worker.
And where did you go to school?
In the Tullymass Road.
Which road?
Tullymass Road, Birkenhead.
And how old were you when you left?
14.
To do what?
Well, firstly, I went as an errand boy in the co-op at Birkenhead.
So how did you come to join the Navy?
Well, firstly, I went to work after I was 16 to Camelades as an apprentice driller. And the first ship I went to work aboard was Prince of Wales.
Can you tell me about the work that you did on that ship?
Well, see, we were way down in the bilges then, more or less, what they call the double bottoms. And there was only small compartments which seemed as though nothing could get in to destroy them. At that time, we was known that it was going to be the unsinkable ship, or which we thought was going to be the unsinkable ship. Unfortunately, later, happenings proved different.
What was the type of work that you precisely were doing?
I was making the holes so that between two plates, so that they could put the rivet in to secure the plates together. You know, when holes overlap sometimes, they tend not to be true and have to be made bigger.
Was the work different on Prince of Wales from what it was to any other warship?
Larger, because the rivets were so much bigger. The rivets were three times the size of normal size ships.
Did you know the name of the ship that you were working on?
No, at that time it was the 1032, just a work number.
But you knew it was a battleship, did you?
I knew it was a battleship, yes. But we had no name for it then, of course, that was given later.
Was there anything special about it, apart from the size of the rivets?
Only that we knew the length of her, like, that she was going to be one of the biggest ships ever known. There was no talk then of the Germans building the battleships Bismarck and Tirpitz and so.
How did you come to join the Navy then?
Well, shortly after I was working on her, the Ark Royal was launched by the Queen Mother. And at the launching, with my mates, I said, come on, we're going to join the Navy. So we went over to Liverpool, and within a few months I was on my way down to Sheerness in Kent, which was HMS Wildfire training ship.
And how did you come to join the Prince of Wales? How did you come to join the Repulse?
Well, after training in Wildfire, I was a petty officer boy at Wildfire, and at the finish, the Repulse's crew was talked of as pretty elite crew at that time, and I finished with a pretty good percentage on seamanship, etc. And I think probably I was picked out for that. Well, what you might call top of the class sort of thing. Repulse at that time was being dubbed as the Royal Yacht because she was taking the King and Queen to Canada on a royal cruise.
Why was it supposed to have an elite crew?
Well, for the royal cruise, I mean, I don't know, it was just a thing that went round.
Do you think it was true?
I don't know, they were happy, it was a very happy crew.
In what way?
In every way, everybody seemed to be on top form. It seemed as though they'd picked the cream out of the fleet, more or less, to put on the one ship. Well, I'm talking about the West Country fleet, because we were Devonport ship. But Portsmouth, I don't think, could provide the men. There'd be a lot of annoyment in this and Portsmouth over that. But I don't think they could provide the number of men to man that ship at that time.
Where did most of the crew come from?
From Devonport Division.
But which parts of the country had they originated from?
Well, they're mostly West Country.
Were there many Liverpool men on the
ship? Oh, quite a number of Liverpool men. There must have been at least 100. Because at that time, we only had about 1,200 aboard. Later, of course, during the war, the complement was increased to just under 1,400.
How did the West Country men get on with the Liverpudlians?
Oh, we were always very happy. All Jana. There was a lot of Scotch people aboard there and all, so...
Was there any rivalry between them?
No, not in the ship. I don't think there's any much rivalry on there. A lot of Welsh people aboard there, no?
What job did you do on the Repulse?
When I first went aboard, I was on the triple 4-inch guns. They were old-type guns, which were in a triple housing on B deck. But later on, I was transferred to the multiple pom-poms.
And what work did you actually do on them?
I was loading number on the pom-poms, but in part watches, I was the layer. I was the layer gun.
What did that involve?
Well, sighting aircraft and bringing it on target with a 300-knot aim-off screen, which you directed onto the aircraft.
What type of screen?
It's like a wire screen. It had 300 100-knot... for estimating the speed of the aircraft, which in those days, before the days of computer, of course, we had to estimate the angle of flight, angle of approach, the speed of the aircraft, and the range, which was supposed to be done in your mind, after a considerable amount of training, of course, but it didn't always seem to prove very effective. At that later period, it didn't, anyway.
What was the name of the screen?
It was I don't know what they call a screen now. It was just the aim off the target. It was like the sight of a rifle. That's only just a point.
You say it wasn't very effective. Why do you think it wasn't very effective?
I think there was too much to work out for the human mind at one time. I mean, the mind wasn't a computer at that period. To work out the angle of flight, angle of approach, the speed of an aircraft, all in a matter of parts of a second, more or less, a virtual impossibility.
And this was something the layer had to do, was it?
Well, the layer and trainer, which was another combination of the two. So they both had to work the same thing. One laying and one training.
Did you stay on that job?
I stayed on that job till we were sunk. I was on there when we were sunk, yeah.
How many men would man a pom-pom?
One, two, three, four. It's 14 altogether.
And who was in charge?
We had the captain of the gun. It was a Petty Officer Bray. He got killed in Exeter, actually.
What was his name?
Petty Officer Bray.
B-R-A-Y?
B-R-A-Y, yes.
And who was second in charge?
Red Slatter, he was a Welsh chap. Came from down Tony Pandy way or somewhere. We used to skit about Tony Pandy, I think that was the place.
What was his name?
Red Slatter. S-L-A-A-T. T-E-R.
And if both of those were killed, who would be in charge?
Well, the layer and the trainer, that'd be either one of us. I mean, if they got killed, I don't think there'd be much chance for the rest of us. They were actually behind the guns when we were in action.
Whereabouts was your gun turret situated?
We're aft, right behind what would have been the Queen Mother's boudoir when we were going to Canada, the present Queen Mother, of course, that is, your Queen then, which was my cleaning station. I used to look after all that area for the last 18 month we were in commission.
Were you on the starboard side or the port side?
It's at right midships aft, just above the after 15 inch. Of course, we only had two 15 inch guns aft. Where we had four 15 inch forward, we only had two 15 inch aft. They're looking like, where I'm looking at the guns now, if it was a little bit further that way, I'd be in the same position aboard the ship.
So you were above those?
Above.
Two 15 inch guns. Now, can you remember being involved in the pursuit of the Bismarck?
Oh, yes. Terrible weather, that. We'd left Greenock, actually. We weren't with the... We hadn't been up in Scapa. But the Hood and the Prince of Wales had left Scapa. And we had to rendezvous with King George V. As soon as we cleared the cloud, we could see it was going to be pretty rough weather. Although, at that moment, we knew nothing was on until we cleared land altogether. And then Captain Tennant broadcast, we were in pursuit of the... what was proposed to be the Bismarck, which had been sighted by one of our cruisers. We were steaming all that night into heavy weather. I don't think anybody got any sleep because we were expecting to meet her in more or less any minute. Of course, the officers on top, they knew a bit different than what we did. However, next morning when we daylight, dawn action stations, the captain informed us then that Hood was expected to engage with Prince of Wales. And, of course, as you know, shortly afterwards, Hood got sunk. But then we were only about 300 miles away, which seems a long way here, but at sea, actually, not really a long way. And... We altered course then, of course, two ships together, making all speed. We were doing about 28 knots at the time in terrific weather. And we could see damage getting done to the front end of the ship. We had one breakwater damage then.
What type of damage?
Flat the sea, the weight of the ship hitting the sea. The waves were terrific.
What and the damage was done water, to what, though?
To the breakwaters, the fuddled breakwaters on the ship. Breakwaters are metal structures which go across the deck to stop the water swishing right down the deck. One of these was almost flat on the deck. But we were still pushing ahead with all the speed we could make. And the next thing we got the report that they'd lost sight of her. So we altered course, went in a different direction altogether. We're still with KG5. Later that day, we got another report, but as you know, as most people know, the Prince of Wales had steamed south then, and we were in a different direction altogether. We were running out of fuel, so there was no way we could carry on. And we turned for Newfoundland, which we only just made. I remember going into Newfoundland, expecting to burn up the mess table and everything for fuel to go in. That's short of oil. I think it was anticipated that they knew the cruiser Prince Eugen had broken away from the Bismarck. And I think it was the hopes of the Admiral Sir John Tovey that we would maybe pick her up after she'd broken away from Bismarck. However, we never met anything after. Just crawled into St. John's, Newfoundland.
Were you and the rest of the crew apprehensive about the meeting the Bismarck?
Oh, yes, very apprehensive. After she'd sunk the Hood, I don't think anybody couldn't be anything else but apprehensive. We knew, as all Admiralty knew, of course we found out a lot later, that our decks was not so armoured as what we'd thought that they were. Even though we went below decks on many an occasion, we saw these 8-inch thick steel doors we had to go through. It proved that they were nothing to a one-ton shell when it lands on a deck, especially from long-range trajectory, because the shell there at long range is dropping almost vertical. So it becomes almost like a bomb hitting the deck. And a ton of shell, I guess, well, a 1,000-pound bomb, isn't it? 2,000-pound bomb.
How did people react when they heard the hood had been sunk?
I think they were very quiet for a considerable period. I mean, we all knew most of the lads on the hood, even though she was a pumpy ship. I better not get that in too often. But some of the lads who were at Wildfire with me were on the hood. I never found out afterwards, like, whether they'd still been on her when she got sunk. But it's not really too late to worry about it now.
After the pursuit of the Bismarck, did you see any action after that?
Well, we had a few. Because the mind over this period becomes a bit mixed up and you're feeling a different thing. See, there was things happened before the Bismarck which didn't know nothing about. Now, Narvik, I'm not sure where that came. No, Narvik was before the Bismarck, of course. After Bismarck, I don't think we had many encounters at all after Bismarck. I think everybody went quiet for a period, because we'd just done a few convoys across to Canada, which is our regular trip, more or less. And reports that the Nyes now, or the Shinehouse, was breaking out in the North Sea. But nothing ever came of it.
What about Narvik? Were you at Narvik?
We were at Narvik, yes.
When was this?
But when the Germans invaded Narvik, the war spike, we were first up there. Narvik Fjord, and a warspike came in behind us, and she had the flag of Admiral Whitworth aboard. So he ordered us out, and he went on up the fjord. Of course, warspike, well, she did the action, so she got all the glory. But the two ships were there. If it had been probably an hour or so earlier, we'd have been probably engaged before the warspike had got engaged. There's the Hardy, Hunter, Hotspur, and Havoc. With the four destroyers who went in, they were our escort, because they arrived there with us.
What do you remember of Narvik?
Well, actually, it was just everything seemed to be in a panic. There was guns going off here, there and everywhere, and the targets to us was invisible because the destroyers were round the headland. We were just in a fjord with high mountains on either side, which was one of the reasons why Warspite went up, because she had super elevation on her guns, which her guns could fire over the hills more so than what we could have done. And, after that, when the destroyer, what was left of the destroyers, came out, we just cleared away to the westward. There was nothing more we could do there.
Did you see any of the German ships?
No, we didn't see any of them, because they were around the corner. Our destroyers saw all those.
What was the weather like?
The weather was quite calm. It wasn't really rough at that period at Narvik. And of course, inside the fjord, which was sheltered, it was more or less flat calm.
Now, can you tell me about the voyage which repulsed me to the Far East in 1941?
So start from the time I left home.
Yes.
I got married on August the 5th, and on August the 8th I rejoined the ship at Devonport. We were in Devonport at the time, one of the few times we'd been down there. And as we cleared decks and got out to sea, we got told we were picking up a convoy for the Middle East. And sure enough, we had rather a large convoy with us. And the weather was lovely, beautiful weather all the way down to Freetown. And the whole convoy pulled into Freetown for water and fuel, etc. while in Freetown, I was cleaning the after pom-poms. One of the gun tappets jammed, and lying just away from us was the aircraft carrier Hermes. We had several rounds of ammunition, cleared our decks by about 10 feet, causing no rather lot of panic on board there. But it was caused through the same reason that sank the Prince of Wales, that sank the Thetis in Liverpool Bay. Paint drying up on tappets, and the tappets stuck together instead of opening to allow the safety arrangements to work. By the time I'd thrown the gun off target and thrown, elevated it out of arms away from the Hermes, we'd fired about 7 rounds from one gun.
Was this from your gun?
From my gun and repulse, yes. So next morning, the Marines and everybody, I think they thought I was a one-man mutiny or something. However, it was proved the ordnance had had a gun stripped down, and the hot weather going down there had dried the paint up rather quickly. And the tappet, so that when I put a gun safety lever to fire, the tappets had remained closed instead of being open to allow the gun to stay safe. So I put the gun safety lever to fire, test the circuits, and off went the gun, because the part that should have opened had stayed jammed tight with paint.
So it was just pure chance that the gun wasn't aiming at the Hermes?
Very lucky. It was only 10 feet above the quarter deck. And that was pretty high out the water, so we were very much looking there, and panic. Of course, I was in panic myself. However, that was at that period, and then we travelled on down to Durban, where we received a great welcome from the South African people. That's one of the reasons why I don't see all this luck going on now with South Africa at the present moment. And from there, right up the east coast of Africa to Mombasa. At Mombasa, we left the convoy, which was the convoy, the main guns that were going out for the Alamein battle.
What happened next?
We went straight across to Colombo then, Ceylon. And we were in Ceylon for about 2 or 3 days, and then we got to, we left Ceylon suddenly, and then next thing, Captain Tennant reported that we were joining up with Prince of Wales and an expected aircraft carrier to go down to Singapore to try and frighten the Japs, because they were getting a bit, you know, a bit, showing a bit of hostility towards certain people. Whether that was intended on the Yanks or not, I don't know. But I think this was in realised before this, because General Smuts had cleared lower deck on board us. He gave us a speech while we were in Durban, and they had told us not to get involved with the Japanese, for the simple reason that the Japanese were a people who you couldn't estimate at that period. You didn't know what they had, and I don't think our Admiralty knew what they had either. After we'd left Colombo and we realised we were going down to Singapore, it became a joke on the mess deck that, we'll go out there. And we had all the Jane's fighting ships, the books of what ships they had and all that. And we'd sunk the whole fleet in about an hour at least. Well, at the most, I'm saying. All the different destroyers and battleships. Of course, what we'd forgotten to think about was the aircraft carriers that they had.
Did you know that they had aircraft carriers?
Not really, no. We didn't know anything about those. In fact, we thought we were the only part at that time with aircraft carriers. This is the general feeling is about the lower deck, like, no doubt the officers knew about it. And their aircraft, which we were anticipating meeting, they were not as fast as our swordfish. They weren't as operable as our swordfish. this is our opinion at that time. Of course, that was to be violently changed within a matter of weeks. When we got into Singapore, everything was lovely and peaceful. Lights all lit up, the city lit up. No sign. You would think the whole world was at peace when we were there. Until the first night in there, which was December the 7th, about 1 o'clock in the morning, we had air raid warnings going. Next minute, we're back in action again, blacking out ship. Where we thought the world was miles away, we'd now come back to find it caught up with us again. Next morning, it was clear low decks, a speech about Japanese doing this to attack Pearl Harbor, and we were putting to sea. With Phillips, who had just arrived out there, he came out afterwards. When we left harbour at Singapore, we had no intentions of that we were going anywhere near northern Singapore. We thought we were going to join up with the American fleet at first. However, it proved to be different. We went up on our own. And when we were clear, we were informed by the captain that it didn't look as though any aircraft carriers were going to join us, which is what Phillips had been waiting for the Indomitable, which should have joined us, had been damaged over in the American West Coast, and obviously she wasn't going to come to join us, so we're going to have no aircraft at all. A lot of things have been written since. People have said that there were plenty of aircraft there, but obviously we saw none while we were there at that period. Until after we were sunk and a couple of Brewster Buffaloes came over. But whether it had been better clearing there, I don't know. That remains for other people outside of us to make
whether
these
it
decisions.
Would have been what?
Better to clear away from that area altogether. But I mean, I don't think there's any way the Navy can back out any time. They've got to go into whatever was there.
How did you get on with the people in Singapore?
I hadn't been ashore. We didn't get ashore even. They gave leave, 4 hours leave to the first watch. Well, that was, of course, the first night. But after that, we never got no leave.
So you personally didn't go ashore?
Not till we were survivors. Not till after the ship was sunk.
When you heard the news of the Japanese attack on the American fleet at Pearl Harbor, what was your reaction and the rest of the crew to that?
Well, we thought then, oh, well, this is not going to take long. Attack the Yanks. We've got the Yanks with us and all. It's going to be over in a week or two. That was our opinion at that time. But, I mean, we'd destroyed in our own minds, we'd destroyed the Japanese fleet within a matter of hours.
What was the opinion in the British Navy towards the American Navy?
I don't think a lot of us had been really concerned with the Americans. I don't think many of us had met Americans before that.
What happened next to you?
Well, then we... remembering the incidents that happened in sequence at sea, we were steaming up north to Singora, where the Japanese were reported to be. We were mostly closed up nearly all the time, close-range aircraft and everything. It's getting things in proper sequence. The captain reported then that we were turning back as there had been a Japanese landing reported at Kuantan, which is about halfway between Singora and Singapore. As the ships were closing into the coastline, we could see this line of, like, small, what you may call LSTs now, you know, landing crafts. We thought this was, well, there's the Japs